Hi, this is Stephen Laddick.
And I'm Kent McPhail. Welcome to What the M,
the podcast about the mortgage default servicing industry.
What the M is a bi-weekly podcast with new episodes dropping every other Friday. This episode of What the M is brought to you by Guardian Asset Management. Guardian Asset Management is the one-stop shop for lenders, servicers, hedge funds, residential and commercial investors, and government entities that need a full suite of property management solutions under one roof. Welcome, listeners. Steve, how's it going today?
Could not be any better, Kent. Beautiful day, pouring rain up here, 40 degrees in Philadelphia. Great day to be sitting inside doing some work today.
I love it. I love it. It's getting pretty warm down here in Mobile already, and we actually moved into some new space. Well, part of the firm moved into some new space in what's called the Waterman Steamship Building, which is a fascinating old building in downtown Mobile. But we're suffering under an air conditioner issue today, so if I break out in a sweat, it's not because...
Yeah, we have the heat turned all the way up here now in North Wales, so...
I love it. I love it. So let's tell our listeners a little bit about the theme for the show today, Steve.
Yeah, we have a really good topic today, and welcome, everyone. We're going to talk to our guest a little bit about what it takes to build a servicer from the ground up, what's involved with that, what types of technologies are out there, and how can we all help the servicing industry work a little better.
Our guest today received her BA from Western Michigan University, her Juris Doctorate from Michigan State University. She then began a career with Madden, Hauser, Roth, and Heller PC. From there, she spent about 19 years in the mortgage servicing industry. She's been the SVP at servicing at Flagstar Bank. She was at Sagent and worked as the chief product officer there. She also founded a mortgage consulting group called Consigliaria, and she currently is serving as the executive vice president of servicing at CMG Financial. Please welcome to the show, Courtney Thompson.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. The intro makes me sound a lot older than I really am. Must be a good Botox program.
Thanks so much for being here, Courtney. We truly appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate you taking the time.
So why don't we jump right in? Tell our listeners a little bit about your path after law school and what led you to get into the default servicing industry.
Well, hey, I guess I learned eventually that I could have stayed a lawyer and been in the default mortgage servicing industry, but no, that wasn't my path. So I think that I was kind of a right place, right time, right hustle kind of gal. I always thought I wanted to be Perry Mason. I always wanted to be a litigator. And then I learned what an alone profession that was. I always did a lot of, work for in real estate and in mortgage and in banking. And pre-recession, of course, there was a lot of, Truth in Lending Act and other regulatory matters that came out of the mortgage industry. And then post-recession, it really all turned to servicing related stuff. Higher level foreclosure avoidance issues, my servicer did this, or maybe some of your listeners' favorite causes of action, like the Gold and Coinage Act of 1845 and, other ways that we don't have to pay our mortgage as consumers on the planet.
I cite that act frequently.
Yeah. The Farm Credit Act was one of my favorite ones in federal court down in Detroit, Michigan. Right where I was ready to, grow some new wings and figure out what else I wanted to do in the law, because things became pretty repetitive, at least for the weirdo brain that I have. The Dodd-Frank was issued. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau was created. And there was a large regulatory project called the Independent Foreclosure Review that I played a part in as a lawyer, as an independent consultant, that really was my bridge to servicing. So when I joined Flagstar Bank, which is, I still say, is the best gift I never asked for. there's two of them, actually. I got two of those from Flagstar. It was originally in an advisory capacity because I had done so much work in the Independent Foreclosure Review. The second best gift I never asked for was actually on April Fool's Day. So we're celebrating a bit of an anniversary. Yesterday was an anniversary of this. And I'm not kidding. It was after I had served in an advisory capacity for the bank for about 4 or 5 months. They said, "Hey, how about you go run the business?" And I was like, How much does that job pay, right? And so, you know, I fumbled into what is really the best community of folks and the best industry of people. And really, it's people at the end of the day that I could have ever asked for, really. And I stay in mortgage servicing, not just for the community of folks that you all and the people that I've become friends with over the last 20 years, but really because the mortgage servicing industry, the mortgage industry still does a crappy job of connecting with people. And when you think about default mortgage servicing, you could argue it's the most important time to connect with people. And I think that there's a lot of barriers to that that we're going to talk about today, namely in, you know, the core technologies that we're using. But the opportunity that I took at CMG, and hopefully I'm not stealing anybody's thunder later on, was really an opportunity to say, okay, we've had a couple decades in servicing. We've done a lot of different types of work, right, in furtherance of making things better. How do we put our money where our mouth is? Can we architect something better than what the industry is operating on, right? Total technology ecosystem to better serve the consumer, to have a better chance at creating what a lot of the mortgage sales folks call a customer for life. You know, how do we do that? And the only way to do that, in my mind, is through the longest relationship that we have with the consumer, which is in mortgage servicing.
Thank you. So, Courtney, that's a great story. I mean, I genuinely believe that life takes us where we're supposed to go if we get out of the way of ourselves. And so how you ended up there at Flagstar and how that led you to where you are today, that's great.
I read The Alchemist this weekend. Have you read that?
Yeah, all right.
I've never read it, and it was on my list of books to read this year. And you basically just quoted from it, sir.
Well, then, you know, I'll have to send my copyright payments to them. But it's been several years since I read it, so it's probably floating around in the back of my brain. And so, like, when you were saying that you're taking a building the servicer from the ground up, my first thought is, did you lose a bet? Did you get stuck here? Because that is such a daunting task. And I know you're up to the challenge, but my gosh, that's pretty impressive.
I love that question. And I think that the answer is, yeah, I kind of did lose a bet. And I think it's this, you know, I'm one of these people that leaves it all in the field when I can. You know, I love when Brené Brown quotes, I think it's Teddy Roosevelt, about if you're not in the arena and the people around you are not also battling in the arena with you, maybe you shouldn't, you know, pay so much attention to their perspectives. And, you know, I have really tried throughout my career to level up to help us, we, as an industry, solve some of the problems that we're facing. And there was a point in time after X many years that, to me at least, it was clear what a better way to do things was, right? It is to understand your information. It is to understand your requirements. It is to not rely upon core financial technology to be the single source of truth for everything that you're doing in servicing, because it was only designed to make and take payments and report things to investors. It wasn't designed for all of the new laws and regulations. It wasn't even designed for foreclosure. You guys know this, right? There were other systems that were created along the way, right, to support these things. And, you know, I even jumped in at some opportunities to potentially resolve that at an industry level. But what we know about the mortgage business is at the end of the day, there has to be the business case for transformation in order for transformation to be invested in. So really, what better way to demonstrate that there is a better way than to just do it? And for me, I mean, maybe I'm the luckiest girl in the world, gal in the world, ladybird in the world. Chris George, who owns the fastest growing originator in the country, who is producing units that make other originators cry, even the big ones, right now in some of the hardest times of originating, you know, reached a point in his own growth or his company's growth that they were ready to invest in servicing. And I talked to him about it for a long time because I told him the same thing. I was like, you don't want a servicer. Nobody really wants to do that. But I can see that if you make the right investment and you do it the right way, maybe it makes sense. And for a company like CMG, who has such a huge presence in building relationships with people, maybe it is the best place to do it. It's not a bank, right? You know, it's not one of these institutions that is laden in regulatory gobbledygook in the same way. And somebody's got to do it. And so at the end of the day, I'm a better salesperson. I'm a more authentic supporter of a better way if I do it myself first. And so why not?
So what is the first step? How does one start building a servicer from nothing?
Isn't that a wonderful idea? Well, first you need a budget and then you need a team. You know, really it is, I would say this, one of the number one problems in mortgage origination and mortgage servicing is fragmentation. Because we started with these technologies a long, long time ago, and then we just started adding things and point solutions and vendors and other things to that core piece of technology. Originations is actually not that different than servicing in this regard. And there's a lot of policy around that as well, that creates barriers to change. So what we did is we said, what is the smallest number of fragments that you actually need to have a mortgage servicer? You need a core financial system. You need a business process management tool, something where there's workflow, right, where your humans can go in. You need something in the customer service space that can manage both human interactions that are digital as well as telephonic, because I'm not quite sure if the telephone is even considered digital anymore. Do people even answer their phones anymore? Not sure. But that's a really interesting question in new servicing. And then you need an aggregator of information to keep those systems together. And that's really, really important. What we have done historically, whether it be LoanServe, which is Sagen's product, or MSP, which is the Ice Knights product, we have put a piece of technology in the middle of our servicing process instead of a data field. And if you put a piece of technology in the middle of it, that piece of technology has to be able to do all of the things, right, in order to make the process effective. And I'm oversimplifying this. But we are building a data-centered model for those pieces of technology that we are using for servicing, and then we are going to append our origination system to them and the other pieces of the CMG business so that everything can live and exist in a single place, right? So that we can get closer to managing the information and the identity and the approach to customer service the CMG way with the consumers, no matter how you're meeting CMG, whether you're making a new loan or whether you're with us in a servicing.
So Courtney, I mean, that's such a breath of fresh air to hear, because so many of the products that we receive files or report back, or pretty much everything in the industry, I feel like we're like in a rowboat, but we've only got one oar, and they're so antiquated.
We travel in circles that way.
Exactly. I keep running into the back of myself. And so, I mean, what a novel concept. So I was preparing for the episode today, and there was an article about when you were taking a position at CMG, and they referred to you as an expert in fintech. Now, I think you just were displaying that in your response to the last question, but that was an interesting term. I'm embarrassed to say I had not seen what it was. And so I asked Mr. Google, but could you tell our listeners what fintech means? And again, where you see that going?
So it's funny. So there's fintech, prop tech, reg tech, you name it. It's just whatever the technology is about. So that's financial technology. There's property technology. So some of the fintech companies that we work with call themselves prop tech. There's technologies that help us manage rules. And so sometimes they call it reg tech, right? And so, you know, when I started Consigliera leaving Flagstar, I originally, the original mission of Consigliera was to help servicers find a better way through the good use of technology. But what I learned really quickly is that if you just keep jamming more technologies into that fragmented ecosystem, you're really, you know, expanding the problem instead of solving the problem. You really have to solve the problem at the heart of it. But at the end of the day, I do think that you have to have that consulting mindset where you're simplifying everything down to the little bits, which is what they're actually big little bits that we were talking about in the previous question. so that you can have a simple environment for your operators, for the consumers, and really for your company to see what the hell is happening inside your mortgage servicing shop. Oh, I would also note, only because you said it, we're going back to the old way. Because we can build servicing from the ground up, you know, we're going to give the attorney network all of the information that they need.
Amen.
Instead of putting them on a rowboat without their oars and without a peanut butter and jelly sandwich to make it to the end of the day. Because, you know, I believe, and I know Amy Newman, who I work with, believes first and foremost that, you know, the default legal network are a bunch of lawyers. Why do we treat them like something else? Right. I think you can handle the information.
I mean, that's a great point. I can tell you, because getting files from multiple different servicers, you get to see the way referrals come in from multiple servicers. And it's remarkable when a servicer gives us everything at the outset, how much easier it is to just proceed on that file rather than piece by piece by piece. And we're sitting on hold because we're a judicial state in Pennsylvania. I can't move forward with certain things without them. And then, you know, you say simple requests like, can I have the payment history the borrower requested? And you'd be shocked how many times they say, well, we have some of that. Here, you can have some of that.
Okay, but that is exactly it, Steve. That is the piece of the fragmentation that we're talking about, because the foreclosure fragment of the technology that the attorney network deals with doesn't have the payment history. Why? Because that's in the core financial system. So unless they're mapping it to that system, there's not an easy way to give it to you, which actually, when you say it, it sounds blasphemous, maybe criminal. But, you know,
definitely not criminal.
But at the end of the day, how am I supposed to? I mean, I fully intend to hold all of your ASSs to the fire with regard to moving files along. But how can I do that if I don't enable you to do that in the first place? I know it happens, by the way, but
it does. And it, hey, you know, we want to move the process as fast as right. we can for you, but and if I have everything, I can do it. So it's like,
absolutely.
I'm never ceased to be amazed at some piece of information. And with different servicers, it's different pieces of information that you think would just be a simple ask that turns into a, you know, three or four requests through the proprietary systems, followed by emails, followed by escalations, just to get, like Steve says, the pay history or something as innocuous as that. And so, well, yeah, this is fascinating. It sounds like you're like moving in a really positive direction. That's awesome.
Well, we got to pull it together at the end of the day. You know, servicing is really, really complicated in its simplicity. And, you know, we've got some really, really great partners to help us there, which actually there's going to be some press releases in the near future about more of the partners that we're working with. And so all of this stuff is going to be available to the industry, too. But, you know, somebody always has to do it first. And Chris George is actually really, you guys should, I'll introduce you to him at some point. Like he really is that cool.
I love it. So what about AI playing into what you're doing? Because everybody's talking about AI for this, that, and the other. And so is that going to play a role in your processing?
Well, I think AI is a very fancy thing or word that CEOs ask questions about now, but they really don't understand how it works at the end of the day. And, you know, there was I say that in love. There was some recent criticism even from the CFPB about like beware of the use of AI and all this other stuff. But, you know, at the end of the day, and I don't want to sound like I'm beating a dead horse, if you don't have your foundational information organized in a place and have it in a place where it is retrievable and reliable, you can't even get to artificial intelligence. And so, I mean, I can put a tool or a chatbot on top of something that doesn't speak to my system, that doesn't create efficiencies in my process, that creates another fragment in my ecosystem to say that I have AI. And listeners, I'm using my big fingers to make quotation marks around my AI word. I can do that. And that is available in the industry, but real effective use of AI involves releasing humans from the rote tasks of servicing, right? And to not have people hitting the escrow button over and over and over and over and over again, because we need somebody to hit the escrow button still. And so, I mean, I think that there's beautiful uses for AI, particularly in consumer management. But it's like any nutritionist would require, or my mother, right? You have to eat your vegetables first. And there's a lot of organization and coordination that I think that the financial services industry needs to do before good AI solutions can really make a difference.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. There's so many tools out there. I remember at one point we got this really nice billing software for the law firm, and I'm not confident that a single invoice ever left the firm. It just sat on a shelf, and we looked at it and said, look at this. It's nice.
So, operator error?
Yeah. No comment. No comment.
Happens to the best of us.
It does. You know? And I'll tell you what, like you touched on the fact that in servicing, regulations are changing every single day in this country. And then you have statewide. Now you have federal. You have the CFPB encouraging states to have additional consumer protections beyond it. I don't know how, from a compliance standpoint, when you're building a servicer, how do you manage all of that? Just the sheer volume of stuff that you have to change daily. It impacts your system every day, every time somebody changes something.
So I think it's a really good question, and I'll go back to, so we're using five primary pieces of technology. There are some servicers, and I've consulted at many of them, right, that have 38 pieces of technology that do the thing that is loss mitigation. So when a loss mitigation rule changes, they're changing 38 touch points to make that rule be effective, right? So the idea here behind simplifying it and stepping away from the vehicle and saying, what do I actually need to do the whole thing? And how do I get the most modern choices in that ecosystem is really in furtherance of being able to keep up with the change environment.
Fantastic. So a little earlier, Kent mentioned the magazine DS News, Default Servicing News. Just a little side story. I was here over the weekend. It was the holiday Easter weekend, and I was cleaning up my office, and I found all these old editions of DS News magazine that I was about to pitch. And I just started flipping through one, and it was October of 2018. And lo and behold, somebody's picture and an article in here about receiving the Rising Business Leader Keystone Award at the Five Star Conference. So tell us a little bit about that award and what and how or why you received it.
Well, I don't know why. that award was really interesting, and it's actually a cool award to receive as a chick in the industry these days in particular. Interestingly, I won the award at the inaugural session for it. It was something that Five Star and Ed Delgado, God bless them, created to start just proactively acknowledging women. And the Rising Star one, I think, was the Young Pups Award. So, you know, people to watch at the time. And so it was funny because not only was it the inaugural offering of those awards, but also because it was the Rising Star, which is the first award, because there were very decorated women that received awards after I did at that were far more experienced than I ever could hope to be. So I also didn't understand that it was like an actual award and there was a stage and then they were like, say some words. And I was like, oh my God. And so I sincerely apologize to anybody who's in those rooms. I don't think I said 4-letter words, but I was just like, this is great. Thank you so much. And it was probably, I'm a pretty articulate lady, if I have any amount of preparation, but I was absolutely stunned that anybody even knew who I was.
Well, clearly they didn't miss the mark based on where you are, and you were a rising star and continue to be one. So,
and if that's rising star, Kent, where are we? Are we at the star, or are we on?
You guys are the moon. You're controlling the time. Come on.
What's that? What are those stars that have like already burnt out, but you can still see them because the light's still traveling?
That's pretty cool. I like that.
Yeah, I think that may be us, Steve. So I've got to ask you again, prepping for the show today, I was looking at your LinkedIn page and there is a David Bowie quote, and I'm a big Bowie fan. And so what motivated you to put, let me see what we've got here, take your protein pills and put your helmet on, quote, on your LinkedIn?
Well, we're going to add a little clip from Major Tom to the background.
Oh, yes, please. Yes, please. No, you know, I've always been, I don't want to call myself, yeah, why not? I've always been the queen of the weirdos. And I think that I'm a huge David Bowie fan for a lot of reasons. But, you know, he was a person that, you know, created his own path in a sea of you know, everybody trying to be perfect and great and wonderful. If you think about the time period, it was like we had rejected all of the fun, right, from the 70s. And, you know, we were coming into our own as a country and putting rules around everything. And he bent a lot of the rules for a lot of the right ways. And Major Tom's my favorite song. But I also think that, you know, that lyric just speaks to me because I'm a participator. And I think that there's a lot of people that are existers and I'm just a participator. And so one of the cool things about being a leader in that regard is just being upfront about what you are and what you intend to bring to the table, particularly as a woman. And so why not just tell people right away, you know, take your protein pills. Let's go.
That's awesome. Today's useless trivia. Useless trivia for today. What was David Bowie's original name and why did he change it?
Oh, no. See, you know who would answer this question and get it completely right? Chris George. I don't know.
Believe it or not, you know, obviously he's from England and his original name was David Jones. Davy Jones was in the Monkees and he didn't want to be confused with Davy Jones. So he changed his name.
There's the comparison for you. Something that was appealing toward perfection.
Yeah. How about that? So as someone who has been in the industry for a while, what is your outlook on the mortgage, like originations and delinquencies for 24?
You know, I think that the inventory problem is going to remain a problem for the industry. I think that, you know, there's just not a lot of available space. Interest rates, I mean, there's a lot of different root causes for that, right? So I think that what the economists are saying, and all we can do is listen to them and put it together with what we're seeing on the ground, right? So we're seeing bankruptcies go up a little, and that's usually an indicator that there's going to be more delinquency, right? And we know that the cost of carrying credit, whether it's mortgage credit or credit cards or auto debt, right, is more expensive than it used to be. Employment looks good. So, you know, that's maybe a mitigant there. I just don't think that we're going to see a huge bubble again. I think that it's going to ebb and flow. We're certainly going to see more delinquency toward the end of 24 and the beginning of 25. And that's what the data shows. But is it going to be open wide gates of HE double hockey stick? No.
One follow-up question to that before Kent gets to the last question of the show is, I saw that you're speaking at the conference in April in Washington, Going to Extremes. And the reason I brought that up is, tell us a little bit of A, about that conference, but B, how weather events are impacting the mortgage industry and how can that be one of those triggers that all of a sudden knocks us off the plane we're on?
So there's so much to say about that. And I would encourage your listeners to look at some of the great writing online about Going to Extremes. You know, this is the first at scale climate change in mortgage driven event that I've seen. I'm lucky enough to participate. The woman that is putting it on, Toni Moss, is a genius, to end all geniuses. And I like smart people like y'all. I think that we can't ignore the number of natural disasters that we have seen all over the place, whether it's a Butte fire in California, whether it is, flooding that we've seen as a result of hurricanes in Florida and in other places, or, you know, complete the demolishing of certain areas because of hurricanes. Of course, you know, the people of Lahaina in Hawaii and how climate contributed to that. And, you know, insurance rates in and of themselves have going up. You know, the servicing specific problem right now is in the force placed arena. And it's in escrow, right? And so I think that servicers are feeling this for the first time. In the olden days, if a servicer failed to make an insurance payment for one reason or another, right, with connectivity with all of the consumer's insurance vendors, you would make the payment, you would solve the problem. There would be de minimis impact to the consumer outside of the fact that they'd have to talk to their servicer and everybody would move on. But what we're seeing in the insurance arena now is that this underwriting standards and the standards for being customers of insurance agencies are through the roof now because the risk is higher for these insurance agencies to carry this insurance. And you guys may or may not know this, but there's a boo-boo list for bad consumers in the insurance arena. It's not like credit reporting where it's a publicly available thing. but these carriers track who's making payments and who's not making payments, right? And so from a servicing perspective, maintaining insurance coverage is so important right now because these policies that we have are like these 3% mortgages, right? So, right. And it's really, really, really true. So they're just for the same reason that people aren't moving from their homes or aren't selling their homes because of the cost of debt use was so low not that long ago, right? Are the same reasons why we need these policies to be intact and what is happening around the country. These policies are slowly becoming more and more, or less and less, I should say, sort of more unaffordable, less affordable to consumers in these schemas. And if those consumers miss the payments or the servicers miss making the payments on these insurance policies, and this is just the real example, we're seeing the impact, right? And it's incremental now. And my biggest fear about climate change and these types of problems, which hopefully this event brings awareness to, is that we tend to run so lean in the mortgage industry that we're only solving our top five problems right in front of our faces. And we're not doing a great job of preventing the problems that we know are coming down the pike. I don't believe that the mortgage industry can solve climate change, but I do think that we need to spend more time talking about solutions and affordability. And, you know, the downstream impacts of climate change, which seems inevitable at this point.
I tell you, Courtney, I mean, I'm living the life down here in the middle of what you're talking about. I mean, I live in South Alabama. We live on Mobile Bay, and the cost of insurance is just skyrocketing. And, you know, I'm fortunate to be in a position that it doesn't change my life. It maybe changes my bank account, but people that are living closer to the edge, I think it's going to be an element as we move forward that will be pushing some homes, particularly like in Florida and areas like that, into default. Do you feel like that's out there?
Well, yeah, because I think that consumers disengage from those processes, any processes that are available to help them, in the same way that they disengage from default, right, at the end of the day. And there's so much red tape around this stuff. And there has to be a better way to manage all of it. And I would be remiss to say in this moment that the only other industry that is as aged from an infrastructure perspective, from a technology perspective as mortgage, is the insurance industry.
Man.
And so if you call to make an insurance claim today, just like if you call a mortgage servicer, that system doesn't update till tomorrow. Batch processing, fellas. And I think that homeownership is a cornerstone of like the American experience, right? And climate change and our ability to manage climate change is real. The question is, are we going to put enough energy into it up front to prevent the larger financial losses? And my fear is that until the MSR owners and Fannie Freddie and others actually feel the pain of that financial loss, we're not going to see some of the preventative change.
Well, it's certainly a pleasure to hear you.
And a wonderful ending.
No. But what I'm saying is that at least there are people out there that are thinking about it and about the five, you know, we're not solving the five problems. What's the sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth? And so, yeah, that's. I'm glad that there are people like yourself with vision that are out there doing that. So the last question. That's right. Well, fingers crossed. So I'm going to ask the last question, but then I'm going to have two more questions after it that will be tiny questions. But anyway, my favorite question to ask all of our guests is, if you had the opportunity with all of your life experience to sit down with the 20-year-old version of Courtney Thompson, what advice would you now give that young lady?
I thought about this. And it's a question that, you know, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, she has a new podcast that's called Wiser Than Me. And she's interviewing all these 70, 80, 90-year-old women that are like Jane Fonda and Sally Field. And she asked them this question. And there's various answers. And I think that I would just tell her to calm down. I think that I would tell her that you get more with honey than vinegar. You know, that you know, things change in their course and in their time. And I think that I live that a little bit more than I did 20 years ago. But you know what? I'm grateful for all of the little scars, the little baby scars that I carry from that time period of my life, because they definitely are lessons that I have today.
That's great advice. So the last question I was going to ask actually was, we've been hearing two puppies in the background, one a little higher pitched and one a little lower pitched. And so we want to give them proper credit for the show. What are the names of our other guests that are out there?
I am so sorry. We even gave them bones at the top of the hour, but they want to be on your show so badly. They just haven't left us. There's actually three. So we have a brown lab named Maya Angelou. We have a brown labradoodle named Captain Jack Sparrow. And then our short little fat guy, is Rudy Rudiger, named after the famed Notre Dame football player. And they all, you know, ever since March 13, 2020, we've all worked in this little office here together in Royal Oak, Michigan.
I met Rudy at a Notre Dame game. Not a surprise. I'm not that tall. I'm taller than him. So.
Yeah. My son has always named our animals after whatever's most relevant in our life right now. So now you know a lot about us. Football pirates and epic authors.
I love it. Well, listen, thank you so much for taking the time. What an interesting insight and perspective on the industry, and refreshing. And, you know, I know we took time out of your busy day, but it is so appreciated. And it was a joy getting to interview you, Steve.
Thanks so much. I truly appreciate your insights. We look forward to following your company and how the growth in this building works.
Yeah, keep your fingers crossed for me, guys. Thanks for the time. It's really nice to see both of you.
Thank you.
Bye.
If you like what you hear on our podcast and want to hear some more, please rate, review, and subscribe to What the M on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you want to visit with us on social media, we can be found at What the M Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you.